afternoon. I could stay out there if there was a latrine I could use in the market, she said.
I would want you to come home at midday anyway, Mother said. I want to know that you are all right.
One day, after she had been working for a week, Parvana had an idea.
Mother, I'm seen as a boy, right?
That's the idea, Mother said.
Then I could be your escort, Parvana said. I could be Nuria's escort too, and you could both get outside sometimes.
Parvana was excited about this. If Nuria got some exercise, maybe she wouldn't be so grumpy. Of course, she wouldn't get much fresh air under the burqa, but at least it would be a change.
Excellent idea, Mrs. Weera said.
I don't want you as my escort, Nuria said, but Mother stopped her from saying any more.
Nuria, Ali should go outside. Parvana is able to manage fine with Mariam, but Ali squirms so much. You will have to hold on to him.
You should get out sometimes too, Fatana, Mrs. Weera said to Mother.
Mother didn't answer.
For Ali's sake, Nuria went along with the idea. Every day after lunch, Parvana, Nuria, Ali and Mariam went outside for an hour.
Ali had been only a few months old when the Taliban came. All he really knew was the little room they had been shut up in for a year and a half. Nuria had not been outside either in all that time. They would walk around the neighborhood until their legs got tired. Then they would sit in the sunshine. When there was no one around, Parvana would keep watch, and Nuria would flip up her burqa to let the sun pour down on her face.
I'd forgotten how good this feels, she said.
When there was no lineup at the water tap, Nuria would wash the little ones right there and save Parvana having to carry that water. Sometimes Mrs. Weera was with them with her grandchild, and all three children were washed at the same time. Business had good days and bad days. Sometimes Parvana would sit for hours without a customer. She made less money than her father had, but the family was eating, even though most days they ate just naan and tea. The children seemed livelier than they had in a long time. The daily sun and fresh air were doing them a lot of good, although Nuria said they were harder to look after now in the room. They had more energy and always wanted to go outside, which they couldn't do when Parvana was out at work. At the end of each day, Parvana handed over all the money she'd made. Sometimes Mother asked her to buy naan or something else on the way home. Sometimes, the times Parvana liked best, Mother would come with her to the market to shop for the family. Mrs. Weera's arguments had finally worn her down. Parvana liked having her mother all to herself, even though they didn't talk about anything other than how much cooking oil to buy or whether they could afford soap that week. Parvana loved being in the market. She loved watching people move along the streets, loved hearing snatches of conversation that reached her ears, loved reading the letters people brought her. She still missed her father, but as the weeks went by, she began to get used to him being gone. It helped that she was so busy now. The family didn't talk about him, but she heard Mother and Nuria crying sometimes. Once Mariam had a nightmare and woke up calling for father. It took Mother a long time to get her back to sleep. Then, one afternoon, Parvana saw her father in the market. He was walking away from her, but Parvana was sure it was him.
Father, she called out, springing off her blanket and rushing after him. Father, I'm here!
She ran into the crowd, pushing people out of her way, until she finally reached her father and threw her arms around him.
Father, you're safe! They let you out of prison!
Who are you, boy?
Parvana looked up into a strange face. She backed away.
I thought you were my father, she said, tears falling down her face.
The man put his hand on her shoulder.
You seem like a fine boy. I'm sorry I'm not your father.
He paused, then said in a lower voice,
Your father is in prison?
Parvana nodded.
People are released from prison sometimes. Don't give up hope.
The man went on his way into the market, and Parvana went back to her blanket. One afternoon, Parvana was about to shake out her blanket before going home, when she noticed a spot of colour on the grey wool. She bent down to pick it up. It was a small square of embroidered cloth, no more than 2 inches long and 1 inch wide. Parvana had never seen it before. As she wondered where it had come from, her eyes went up to the blacked-out window, where she thought she had seen a flicker of movement a few weeks before. There was no movement now. The wind must have carried the little piece of embroidery to her blanket, although it hadn't been a very windy day. She couldn't blame the wind a few days later, though, when she found a beaded bracelet on her blanket after work. She looked up at the window. It was open. It swung out over the wall of the house. Parvana walked closer to get a better look. In the narrow, open space, Parvana saw a woman's face. The woman gave Parvana a quick smile, then pulled the window shut. A few days later, Parvana was sitting watching the tea boys run back and forth between the customers and the tea shop. One of the boys almost collided with a donkey. Parvana was laughing and looking the other way when a tea boy tripped on something near her and spilled a tray of empty teacups all over her blanket. The boy sprawled in the dust in front of Parvana. She helped him gather the cups that had rolled away. She handed him the tray and saw his face for the first time. She let out a gasp and slapped a hand across her mouth. The tea boy was a girl from her class. Chapter 9. Shauzia? Parvana whispered. Call me Shafiq. And what do I call you? Kasim, what are you doing here? The same as you, silly. Look, I have to get back to the tea shop. Will you be here for a while? Parvana nodded. Good. I'll come back. Shauzia picked up her tea things and ran back to the shop. Parvana sat there, stunned, watching her old classmate blend in with the other tea boys. It was only by looking at them very carefully that Parvana could distinguish her friend from the others. Then, realizing it wasn't a good idea to stare in case someone asked what she was looking at, Parvana looked away. Shauzia melted back into the market. Shauzia and Parvana had not been very close in school. They had different friends. Parvana thought Shauzia had been better at spelling, but she couldn't remember for certain. So there were other girls like her in Kabul. She tried to remember who was in Shauzia's family, but didn't think she knew. Her mind was not on the last two customers of the day, and she was glad when she finally saw Shauzia jogging over to her blanket. Where do you live? Shauzia asked. Parvana pointed. Let's pack up and walk while we talk. Here, I brought you these. She handed Parvana a small twist of paper, holding several dried apricots, something she had not eaten in ages. She counted them. There was one for everyone in her household, and an extra one for her to eat now. She bit into it, and a wonderful sweetness flooded her mouth. Thanks. She put the rest of the apricots in her pocket, with the day's wages, and began to pack up. There was no little gift left on the blanket today. Parvana didn't mind. Seeing Shauzia was quite enough excitement for one day. How long have you been doing this? Shauzia asked as they walked out of the market. Almost a month. How about you? 6 months. My brother went to Iran to find work nearly a year ago, and we haven't heard from him since. My father died of a bad heart, so I went to work. My father was arrested. Have you had any news? No. We went to the prison, but they wouldn't tell us anything. We haven't heard anything at all. You probably won't. Most people who are arrested are never heard from again. They just disappear. I have an uncle who disappeared. Parvana grabbed Shauzia's arm and forced her to stop walking. My father's coming back, she said. He is coming back. Shauzia nodded. All right. Your father is different. How's business? Parvana let go of Shauzia's arm and started walking again. It was easier to talk about business than about her father. Some days are good, some days are bad. Do you make much money as a tea boy? Not much. There are a lot of us, so they don't have to pay well. Hey, maybe if we work together we can come up with a better way to make money. Parvana thought of the gifts left on the blanket. I'd like to keep reading letters, at least for part of the day. But maybe there's something we could do for the rest of the day. I'd like to sell things off a tray. That way I could move with the crowd. But first, I need enough money to buy the tray and the things to sell, and we never have extra money. We don't either. Could we really make a lot of money that way?
Often there was not enough money for kerosene, so they could not light the lamps at night. It made the nights very long.
From what the other boys tell me, I'd make more than I'm making now. But what's the use of talking about it? Do you miss school?
The girls talked about their old classmates until they turned down Parvana Street, the one with Mount Parvana at the end of it. It was almost like the old days, when Parvana and her friends would walk home from school together, complaining about teachers and homework assignments.
I live up here, Parvana said, gesturing up the flight of stairs on the outside of her building. You must come up and say hello to everyone.
Shazia looked at the sky to try to judge how late it was.
Yes, I'll say hello, but after that I'll have to run. When your mother tries to get me to stay for tea, you must back me up and tell her I can't.
Parvana promised, and up the stairs they went. Everyone was surprised when she walked in with Shazia. Everyone embraced her, as if she was an old friend, even though Parvana didn't think they had ever met before.
I'll let you leave without eating this time, Mother said, but now that you know where we are, you must bring your whole family by for a meal.
There's only my mother and me and my two little sisters left, Shazia said. My mother doesn't go out. She's sick all the time. We're living with my father's parents and one of his sisters. Everybody fights all the time. I'm lucky to be able to get away from them and go to work.
Well, you're welcome here any time, Mother said.
Are you keeping up with your studies? Mrs. Weira asked.
My father's parents don't believe in girls being educated, and since we're living in their house, my mother says we have to do what they say.
Do they mind you dressing like a boy and going out to work? Shazia shrugged.
They eat the food I buy. How could they mind?
I've been thinking of starting up a little school here, Mrs. Weira said to Parvana's surprise. A secret school, for a small number of girls a few hours a week. You must attend. Parvana will let you know when.
What about the Taliban?
The Taliban will not be invited, Mrs. Weira smiled at her own little joke.
What will you teach?
Field hockey, Parvana replied.
Mrs. Weira was a physical education teacher.
The idea of holding a secret field hockey school in their apartment was so ridiculous that everyone started to laugh. Shazia was still laughing when she left for home a few minutes later. There was much to talk about that night at supper.
We must pay her mother a visit, Mother said. I'd like to get her story for our magazine.
How are you going to publish it? Parvana asked.
Mrs. Weira answered that.
We will smuggle the stories out to Pakistan, where it will be printed. Then we'll smuggle it back in a few at a time.
Who will do the smuggling? Parvana asked,
half afraid they were going to make her do it. After all, if they could turn her into a boy, they could have other ideas for her as well.
Other women in our organization, Mother answered. We've had visitors while you've been in the market. Some of our members have husbands who support our work and will help us.
Nuria had ideas for the school. She had been planning to go to teachers' college when she finished high school, before the Taliban changed her plans. Father had given her and Parvana lessons for a while, when the schools first closed, but his health was not good, and the practice fell away.
I could teach arithmetic and history, Nuria said. Mrs. Weira could teach health and science, and Mother could teach reading and writing.
Parvana didn't like the idea of learning from Nuria. As a teacher, she'd be even bossier than she was as a big sister. Still, she couldn't remember the last time she'd seen Nuria excited about something, so she kept quiet.
Almost every day, Parvana and Shazia would see each other in the market. Parvana waited for her friend to come to her. She was still too shy to run among the pack of tea boys looking for Shazia. They talked about someday having enough money to buy trays and things to sell from them, but so far, neither could come up with a way to make it happen. One afternoon, when she was between customers, something landed on Parvana's head. She quickly snatched it off. After checking to make sure no one was watching, she took a look at the latest present from the window woman. It was a lovely white handkerchief with red embroidery around the edges. Parvana was about to look up and smile her thanks at the window, in case the window woman was watching, when Shazia ran up to the blanket.
What do you have there?
Parvana jumped and stuffed the handkerchief in her pocket.
Nothing. How was your day?
The usual, but I've got some news. A couple of tea boys heard of a way to make money. Lots of money.
How? You're not going to like it. Actually, neither do I. But it will pay better than what we've been doing.
What is it?
Shaozia told her. Parvana's mouth dropped open. Shaozia was right. She didn't like it.
Chapter 10 Bones. They were going to dig up bones.
I'm not sure this is a good idea, Parvana said to Shaozia the next morning.
She had her blanket and her father's writing things with her. She hadn't been able to tell her mother about going bone digging, so she didn't have a reason to leave her usual work things behind.
I'm glad you brought the blanket. We can use it to haul away the bones. Shaozia ignored Parvana's objections. Come on, we better hurry or we'll get left behind.
Getting left behind did not sound so terrible to Parvana, but with a quick look across the market to the painted-in window with her secret friend, she obediently fell in behind Shaozia as they ran to catch up with the group. The sky was dark with clouds. They walked for almost an hour, down streets Parvana didn't recognize, until they came to one of the areas of Kabul most heavily destroyed by rockets. There wasn't a single intact building in the whole area, just piles of bricks, dust and rubble. Bombs had fallen on the cemetery, too. The explosions had shaken up the graves in the ground. Here and there, white bones of the long dead stuck up out of the rusty brown earth. Flocks of large black and grey crows cawed and pecked at the ground around the ruined graves of the newer section of the graveyard. The slight breeze carried a rotting stench to where Parvana and Shaozia were standing, on the edge of the cemetery's older section. They watched the boys fan out across the graveyard and start digging. Parvana noticed a man setting up a large weigh scale next to the partially destroyed wall of a building.
Who's that?
That's the bone broker. He buys the bones from us.
What does he do with them?
He sells them to someone else.
Why would anyone want to buy bones?
What do we care, as long as we get paid?
Shaozia handed Parvana one of the rough boards she'd brought along to use as a shovel. Come on, let's get busy.
They walked over to the nearest grave.
What if there's still a body there?
Parvana began. I mean, what if it's not bones yet?
We'll find one with a bone sticking out of it.
They walked around for a moment, looking. It didn't take long.
Spread out the blanket, Shaozia directed. We'll pile the bones onto it, then make a bundle out of it.
Parvana spread the blanket, wishing she were back in the market, sitting under the window where her secret friend lived. The two girls looked at each other, each hoping the other would make the first move.
We're here to make money, right? Shaozia said.
Parvana nodded.
Then let's make money.
She grabbed hold of the bone that was sticking out of the ground and pulled. It came out of the dirt as if it were a carrot being pulled up from a garden. Shaozia tossed it on the blanket.
Not willing to let Shaozia get the better of her, Parvana took up her board and started scraping away the soil. The bombs had done much of the work for them. Many bones were barely covered by dirt and were easy to get at.
Do you think they'd mind us doing this? Parvana asked.
Who?
The people who are buried here. Do you think they'd mind us digging them up?
Shaozia leaned on her board.
Depends on the type of people they were. If they were nasty, stingy people, they wouldn't like it. If they were kind and generous people, they wouldn't mind.
Would you mind?
Shaozia looked at her, opened her mouth to speak, then closed it again and returned to her digging. Parvana didn't ask her again. A few minutes later, Parvana unearthed a skull.
Hey, look at this!
She used the board to loosen the ground around it, then dug the rest of it up with her fingers so she wouldn't break it. She held it up to Shaozia as though it were a trophy.
It's grinning!
Of course it's grinning!
He's glad to be out in the sunshine after being in the dark ground for so long. Aren't you glad, Mr. Skull?
She made the skull nod.
See? I told you.
Prop him up on the gravestone. He'll be our mascot.
Parvana placed him carefully on the broken headstone.
He'll be like our boss, watching us to make sure we do it right.
They cleaned out the first grave and moved on to the next, taking Mr. Skull with them. He was joined in a little while by another skull. By the time their blanket was full of bones, there were five skulls perched in a row, grinning down at the girls.
"I have to go to the bathroom," Parvana said. "What am I going to do?"
"I have to go too." Shazia looked around. "There's a doorway over there," she said, pointing toward a nearby ruined building.
"You go first. I'll keep watch."
"Over me?"
"Over our bones."
"I should go right out here?"
"No one is paying attention to you.
It's either that or hold it." Parvana nodded and put down her board shovel. She'd been holding it for a while already. Checking to make sure no one was looking, she headed over to the sheltered doorway.
"Hey, Kasim!"
Parvana looked back at her friend.
"Watch out for landmines,"
Shazia said. Then she grinned. Parvana grinned back. Shazia was probably joking, but she kept her eyes open anyway.
"Kabul has more landmines than flowers," her father used to say. "Landmines are as common as rocks and can blow you up without warning. Remember your brother."
Parvana remembered the time someone from the United Nations had come to her class with a chart showing the different kinds of landmines. She tried to remember what they looked like. All she could remember was that some were disguised as toys, special mines to blow up children. Parvana peered into the darkness of the doorway. Sometimes armies would plant mines in buildings as they left an area. Could someone have planted a landmine there? Would she blow up if she stepped inside? She knew she was faced with three choices. One choice was not to go to the bathroom until she got home. That was not possible. She really couldn't hold it much longer. Another choice was to go to the bathroom outside the doorway where people might see her and figure out she was a girl. The third was to step into the darkness, go to the bathroom in private, and hope she didn't explode. She picked the third choice. Taking a deep breath and uttering a quick prayer, she stepped through the doorway. She did not explode.
"No landmines?" Shazia asked when Parvana returned. "I kicked them out of the way," Parvana joked,
but she was still shaking.
When Shazia came back from her trip to the doorway, they made a bundle of the bones in the blanket, with the skulls thrown in, and carried it together over to the bone broker and his scales. He had to fill the bucket on the scales three times to accommodate all their bones. He added up the weight, named an amount, and counted up the money.
Parvana and Shazia didn't say anything until they were well away from the bone broker's stall. They were afraid he might have made a mistake and given them too much.
"This is as much as I made in 3 days last week," Parvana said.
"I told you we'd make money," Shazia said, as she handed half the cash to Parvana.
"Shall we quit for the day or keep digging?"
"Keep digging, of course."
Mother expected her for lunch, but she'd think of something to tell her. In the middle of the afternoon, there was a small break in the clouds. A stream of bright sunlight hit the graveyard. Parvana gave Shazia a nudge, and they looked out over the mounds of dug-up graves, at the boys sweaty and smudged with dirt, at the piles of bones beside them, gleaming white in the sudden sunshine.
"We have to remember this," Parvana said. "When things get better and we grow up, we have to remember that there was a day when we were kids, when we stood in a graveyard and dug up bones to sell so that our families could eat.
Will anyone believe us?"
"No, but we will know it happened.
When we're rich old ladies, we'll drink tea together and talk about this day."
The girls leaned on their board shovels, watching the other children work. Then the sun went back in, and they got back to work themselves. They filled their blanket again before stopping for the day.
"If we turn all this money over to our families, they'll find things to spend it on, and we'll never get our trays," Shazia said. "I think we should keep something back, not turn it all over to them."
"Are you going to tell your family what you were doing today?"
"Nope," Shazia said. "Neither will I," Parvana said. "I'm just going to turn over my regular amount, maybe a little bit more. I'll tell them someday, but not just now."
They parted, arranging to meet again early the next morning for another day of bone digging. Before going home, Parvana went to the water tap. Her clothes were dirty. She washed them off as best she could, while they were still on her. She took the money out of her pocket and divided it in two. Some she put back in her pocket to give to her mother. The rest she hid in the bottom of her shoulder bag, next to her father's writing paper. Finally, she stuck her whole head under the tap, hoping the cold water would wash the images of what she had done all day out of her head. But every time she closed her eyes, she saw Mr. Skull and his companions lined up on the gravestones, grinning at her.
Chapter 11.
"You're all wet,"
Mariam said, as soon as Parvana walked through the door.
"Are you all right?" Mother rushed up to her. "Where were you? Why didn't you come home for lunch?"
"I was working," Parvana said. She tried to twist away, but her mother held her firmly by the shoulders.
"Where were you?"
Mother repeated.
"We've been sitting here, terrified that you had been arrested."
All that she had seen and done that day came rushing into Parvana's mind. She threw her arms around her mother's neck and cried. Mother held her until she was calm again and could talk. "Now, tell me where you were today." Parvana found she could not bear to say it to her mother's face, so she pressed herself up against the wall and told her.
"I was digging up graves."
"You were doing what?"
Nuria asked. Parvana left the wall and sat down on the toshak. She told them all about her day.
"Did you see real bones?"
Mariam asked. Mrs. Weira told her to hush.
"So this is what we've become in Afghanistan," Mother said. "We dig up the bones of our ancestors in order to feed our families."
"Bones are used for all sorts of things," Mrs. Weira replied. "Chicken feed, cooking oil, soap and buttons. I've heard of animal bones being used this way, not human bones. But I suppose human beings are also animals."
"Was it worth it?" Nuria asked. "How much money did you make?" Parvana took the money out of her pocket, then dug the rest of the money out of the shoulder bag. She put it all on the floor for everyone to see.
"All that for digging up graves," Mrs. Weira breathed.
"Tomorrow you'll go back to reading letters, no more of this digging," Mother declared. "We don't need money that badly."
"No,"
Parvana said to her mother.
"I beg your pardon?"
"I don't want to quit yet. Shauzia and I want to buy trays and things to sell from the trays. I can follow the crowd that way instead of waiting for the crowd to come to me. I can make more money."
"We are managing fine on what you earn reading letters."
"No, Mother, we're not,"
Nuria said. Mother spun around to scold Nuria for talking back, but Nuria kept talking.
"We have nothing left to sell. What Parvana earns keeps us in naan, rice and tea, but there's nothing extra. We need money for rent, for propane, for fuel for the lamps. If she can make money this way and she's willing to do it, then I think she should be allowed."
It was Parvana's turn to be stunned. Nuria taking her side? Such a thing had never happened before.
"I'm glad your father isn't here to hear you talk to me with such disrespect."
"That's just it," Mrs. Weira said gently. "Their father isn't here. These are unusual times. They call for ordinary people to do unusual things just to get by."
In the end, Mother relented.
"You must tell me everything that happens," she told Parvana. "We will put it in the magazine so that everyone will know."
From then on, she sent Parvana off to work with a little packet of naan for her lunch.
"Since you won't be back at midday."
Although Parvana got very hungry during the day, she couldn't bear to eat in the middle of the field of bones. She gave her naan to one of Kabul's many beggars, so that someone would get some use out of it. At the end of 2 weeks, they had enough money to buy the trays, with straps to go around their necks to carry them.
"We should sell things that don't weigh much," Shauzia said.
They decided on cigarettes, which they could buy in big cartons and sell by the pack. They also sold chewing gum by the pack and sometimes by the stick. Boxes of matches filled up the empty spaces on the trays.
"My tea-boy days are over," Shauzia said gleefully.
"I'm just happy to be out of the graveyard," Parvana said.
She was learning to walk and balance the tray at the same time. She didn't want all her lovely goods to fall into the dirt. The first morning back at her letter-reading post was almost over before she felt something drop on her head again. Her aim is getting good, Parvana thought. Two direct hits in a row.
This time the gift was a single red wooden bead. Parvana rolled it around her fingers and wondered about the woman who had sent it. Her graveyard stint over, she was back to going outside with Nuria and the little ones in the middle of the day. A change had come over Nuria. She hadn't said anything nasty to Parvana in ages. Or maybe it's me who's changed, Parvana thought. Arguing with Nuria simply didn't make sense anymore. In the afternoon, she would meet up with Shazia, and the two of them would wander around Kabul looking for customers. They did not earn as much as they did in the graveyard, but they did all right. Parvana was getting to know Kabul. "There's a crowd," Shazia said one Friday afternoon, pointing at the sports stadium. Thousands of people were headed into the stands.
"Wonderful,"
exclaimed Parvana. "People will want to smoke and chew gum while they watch a soccer game. We'll sell out. Let's go."
They ran over to the stadium entrance as fast as they could, without bouncing their cigarettes onto the ground. Several Taliban soldiers were urging people inside, yelling at them to hurry. They pushed and shoved people through the stadium gates, swinging their sticks to get the slow ones to move faster.
"Let's avoid those guys," Shazia suggested. She and Parvana dodged around some groups of men and slipped into the stadium. The stadium stands were almost full. The two girls were a little intimidated by so many people and stayed next to each other as they went up into the bleachers to sell their wares.
"It's awfully quiet for a soccer game," Shazia said.
"The game hasn't started yet. Maybe the cheering will start when the players come on the field." Parvana had seen sports events on television, and people in the stands always cheered. No one was cheering. The men did not look at all happy to be there.
"This is very strange," Parvana whispered into Shazia's ear. "Look out!"
A large group of Taliban soldiers walked onto the field close to them. The girls ducked down low so they could see the field, but the Taliban couldn't see them.
"Let's get out of here," Shazia said. "No one's buying anything from us, and I don't know why, but I'm getting scared." "As soon as the game starts, we'll go," Parvana said. "If we try to leave now, people will look at us."
More men moved onto the field, but they weren't soccer players. Several men were brought in with their hands tied behind their backs. A heavy-looking table was carried out by two of the soldiers.
"I think those men are prisoners," Shazia whispered. "What are prisoners doing at a soccer game?" Parvana whispered back.
Shazia shrugged. One of the men was untied, then bent over the table. Several soldiers held him down, his arms stretched out across the tabletop. Parvana didn't have a clue what was going on. Where were the soccer players? All of a sudden, one of the soldiers took out a sword, raised it above his head, and brought it down on the man's arm. Blood flew in every direction. The man cried out in pain. Next to Parvana, Shazia started screaming. Parvana clamped her hand over Shazia's mouth and pulled her down to the floor of the stadium stands. The rest of the stadium was quiet. There was still no cheering.
"Keep your heads down, boys," a kind voice above Parvana said. "There will be time enough when you are old to see such things."
The cigarettes and gum had fallen off their trays, but the men around them gathered up the spilled items and returned them to the girls. Parvana and Shazia stayed huddled among people's feet, listening to the sword thwack down on six more arms.
"These men are thieves," the soldiers called out to the crowd. "See how we punish thieves? We cut off one of their hands. See what we do."
Parvana and Shazia did not look. They kept their heads down until the man with the kind voice said,
"It's over for another week. Come now. Raise yourselves up."
He and several other men surrounded Parvana and Shazia, escorting them out of the stadium. Just before she left, Parvana caught a glimpse of a young Talib man, too young to have a beard. He was holding up a rope, strung with four severed hands like beads on a necklace. He was laughing and showing off his booty to the crowd. Parvana hoped Shazia hadn't seen.
"Go home, boys," the kind man told them. "Go home and remember better things."
Chapter 12. Parvana stayed home for a few days. She went out to get water, and she and Nuria took the little ones out into the sunshine, but beyond that, she wanted to be with her family. "I need a break," she told her mother. "I don't want to see anything ugly for a while." Mother and Mrs. Weira had heard about the events at the stadium from other women's group members. Some had husbands or brothers who had been there.
"This goes on every Friday," Mother said. "What century are we living in?"
"Will Father be taken there?"
Parvana wanted to ask, but she didn't. Her mother wouldn't know. During her days at home, Parvana coached Mariam on her counting, tried to learn mending from Nuria, and listened to Mrs. Weira's stories. They weren't as good as her father's stories. Mostly they were descriptions of field hockey games or other athletic events. Still, they were entertaining, and Mrs. Weira was so enthusiastic about them that she made other people enthusiastic too. No one said anything to Parvana when the bread ran out, but she got up and went to work that day anyway. Some things just had to be taken care of. "I'm glad you're back," Shazia said when she saw Parvana in the market. "I missed you. Where were you?"
"I didn't feel like working," Parvana replied. "I wanted some quiet days."
"I wouldn't mind some of those, but it's noisier in my home than it is out here."
"Is your family still arguing?"
Shazia nodded.
"My father's parents never really liked my mother anyway. Now they depend on her. It makes them grumpy.
Mother's grumpy because we have to live with them since there's no place else to go. So everybody is grumpy. If they're not actually arguing, they sit and glare at each other."
Parvana thought about how it felt in her home sometimes, with everyone going around with tight lips and unshed tears in their eyes. It sounded even worse in Shaozia's house.
"Can I tell you a secret?" Shaozia asked.
She led Parvana over to a low wall, and they sat down.
"Of course you can tell me. I won't tell anybody."
"I'm saving money. A little bit each day. I'm getting out of here."
"Where? When?"
Shazia kicked at the wall in a rhythm, but Parvana stopped her. She'd seen the Taliban hit a child for banging on an old board like it was a drum. The Taliban hated music.
"I'll stay until next spring," Shazia said. "I'll have a lot of money saved by then, and it's better not to travel in the winter."
"Do you think we'll still have to be boys in the spring? That's a long time from now."
"I want to still be a boy then," Shazia insisted. "If I turn back into a girl, I'll be stuck at home. I couldn't stand that."
"Where will you go?"
"France. I'll get on a boat and go to France."
"Why France?" she asked.
Shazia's face brightened.
"In every picture I've seen of France, the sun is shining, people are smiling, and flowers are blooming. France people must have bad days too, but I don't think their bad days can be very bad, not bad like here.
In one picture I saw a whole field of purple flowers. That's where I want to go. I want to walk into that field and sit down in the middle of it and not think about anything."
Parvana struggled to remember her map of the world. "I'm not sure you can get to France by boat."
"Sure I can. I've got it all figured out. I'll tell a group of nomads that I'm an orphan, and I'll travel with them into Pakistan. My father told me they go back and forth with the seasons, looking for grass for their sheep. In Pakistan, I head down to the Arabian Sea, get on a boat, and go to France."
She spoke as if nothing could be more simple.
"The first boat I get on might not go directly to France, but at least I'll get away from here. Everything will be easy once I get away from here."
"You'll go by yourself."
Parvana couldn't imagine undertaking such a journey on her own.
"Who will notice one little orphan boy?" Shazia replied. "No one will pay any attention to me. I just hope I haven't left it too late."
"What do you mean?"
"I'm starting to grow."
Her voice dropped almost to a whisper.
"My shape is changing. If it changes too much, I'll turn back into a girl, and then I'll be stuck here. You don't think I'll grow too fast, do you? Maybe I should leave before the spring. I don't want things to pop out of me all of a sudden."
Parvana did not want Shazia to leave, but she tried to be honest with her friend.
I can't remember how it happened with Nuria. Mostly, I watched her hair grow. But I don't think growing happens all of a sudden. I'd say you have time.
Shazia started to kick the building again. Then she stood up so she wouldn't be tempted.
That's what I'm counting on. You'll leave your family? How will they eat?
I can't help that. Shazia's voice rose and caught as she tried not to cry. I just have to get out of here. I know that makes me a bad person, but what else can I do? I'll die if I have to stay here.
Parvana remembered arguments between her father and mother, her mother insisting they leave Afghanistan, her father insisting they stay. For the first time, Parvana wondered why her mother didn't just leave. In an instant, she answered her own question. She couldn't sneak away with four children to take care of.
I just want to be an ordinary kid again, Parvana said. I want to sit in a classroom and go home and eat food that someone else has worked for. I want my father to be around. I just want a normal, boring life.
I don't think I could ever sit in a classroom again, Shazia said. Not after all this.
She adjusted her tray of cigarettes.
You'll keep my secret?
Parvana nodded.
Do you want to come with me?
Shazia asked.
We could look after each other.
I don't know.
She could leave Afghanistan, but could she leave her family? She didn't think so.
I have a secret too, she said.
She reached into her pocket and pulled out the little gifts she'd received from the woman at the window. She told Shazia where they had come from.
Wow, Shazia said. That's a real mystery. I wonder who she could be. Maybe she's a princess.
Maybe we can save her, Parvana said.
She saw herself climbing up the wall, smashing the painted-over window with her bare fist and helping the princess down to the ground. The princess would be wearing silk and jewels. Parvana would swing her up onto the back of a fast horse, and they'd ride through Kabul in a cloud of dust.
I'll need a fast horse, she said.
How about one of those?
Shazia pointed to a herd of long-haired sheep snuffling through the garbage on the ground of the market. Parvana laughed, and the girls went back to work. At her mother's suggestion, Parvana had brought a few pounds of dried fruit and nuts. Nuria and Mariam put them into smaller bags, enough for a snack for one person. Parvana sold these from her blanket and her tray. In the afternoon, she and Shazia wandered around the market looking for customers. Sometimes they went to the bus depot, but they had a lot of competition there. Many boys were trying to sell things. They would run right up to someone and stand in the person's way, saying,
"Buy my gum! Buy my fruit! Buy my cigarettes!"
Parvana and Shazia were too shy for that. They preferred to wait for customers to notice them. Parvana was tired. She wanted to sit in a classroom and be bored by a geography lesson. She wanted to be with her friends and talk about homework and games and what to do on school holidays. She didn't want to know any more about death or blood or pain. The marketplace ceased to be interesting. She no longer laughed when a man got into an argument with a stubborn donkey. She was no longer interested in the snippets of conversation she heard from people strolling by. Everywhere, there were people who were hungry and sick. Women in burqas sat on the pavement and begged, their babies stretched across their laps. And there was no end to it. This wasn't a summer vacation that would end and then life would get back to normal. This was normal, and Parvana was tired of it.
Summer had come to Kabul. Flowers pushed up out of the ground, not caring about the Taliban or landmines, and actually bloomed, just as they did in peacetime.
Parvana's home with its little window grew very hot during the long June days, and the little ones were cranky at night with the heat. Even Mariam lost her good humour and whined along with the two youngest children. Parvana was glad to be able to leave in the morning. Summer brought fruit into Kabul from the fertile valleys, those that had not been bombed into extinction. Parvana brought treats home for her family on the days she made a bit more money. They had peaches one week, plums the next. The clear mountain passes brought traders from all over Afghanistan into Kabul. From her blanket in the marketplace and when she walked around selling cigarettes with Shazia, Parvana saw tribal peoples from Bamiyan, from the Registan desert region near Kandahar, and from the Wakhan corridor near China. Sometimes these men would stop and buy dried fruit or cigarettes